It's time for Heatwave Sports. Sit back and relax as you take a tour around the world of sports each and every Saturday and Sunday night. And now, your hosts for Heatwave Sports, Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
And a wonderful Sunday night, Las Vegas. Welcome. It's Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Tim Unglesby, Ari Platinum, with you from the Lotus Broadcast Studios. We want you to get involved tonight. 876-1340 is the Heatwave hotline, or you can join us at HW Sports and at Tom Barton Sports over on Twitter. With that being said, let me bring in my co-host. Back at it after, we were on last Sunday, so Tom Barton, you know, you didn't get the whole weekend off, but you had a good Saturday night, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely did. It's, I got to tell you, it is one of my favorite times of year. I was trying to think about it, you know, my regular show with Sports Garden, G-A-R-T-E-N, over here in New York, which I have some big news to announce, but, you know, I was doing my show this week. And I said, you know, I think, Tim, this is the best week of sports that we have. Maybe not the most anticipated, but definitely the most jam-packed, right? Let's talk about it. You have September, right, where NFL's opening up. You have college football, and you have baseball, okay? So people anticipate that a little bit more. But I don't know if there's another time where you have the NHL playoffs pushing for, you know, a playoff run here. NHL teams, last 10 games. NBA teams, last 10 games, pushing for a playoff spot. Major League Baseball opening day. NCAA basketball. And the draft is still on people's minds. The draft is only, 3 weeks away. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is the busiest time on the sports calendar this past week.
Tom, before we jump into this, let me ask you a quick question. Does the Sports Garden news have anything to do with Heatwave Sports, or are we still working on that right now?
Still working on that. Okay. Can't announce that for, you know, this is step one in a process. So we will, it took me about 4 months to get this news to go, so it might take probably until the summer, I would say, at least.
That's okay. We're on a path, and we'll let you drop the news a little bit later tonight on about your weekday show there in New York, Sports Garden Network. And Tom, you know, we, like you said, we have plenty of things to talk about. I know we want to kind of touch on everything, including the hockey, even though, according to some people we know, you don't know anything about it. But we're going to talk about that tonight as well.
But can I give a little pop to TomBartonSports.com early on here?
Yeah.
Because you just set me up perfectly. For years, we've heard what? You know, we don't know anything about hockey, right? although you were at the forefront of hockey in Las Vegas, and I talked about it for 10 years before I came to on Vegas radio. Right now, at CappersMonitor.com, I decided, if you guys remember, I announced it, I decided after a five-year absence of betting on hockey games to get back into it. I was about a 51-52% player for years there. So at TomBartonSports.com, we had never done hockey in 5 years. At CoppersMonitor.com right now, I am number one in the country in hockey plays. Number one in the country in hockey plays. Capper Tech, number one in the country in hockey plays. So for a guy that doesn't know anything about hockey, yeah, I get the best winning percentage in the country right now.
There you go.
There you go.
Flipping that coin, huh, Tom, every day? Flipping the coin.
Yeah, exactly.
Islanders,
you know what it is with hockey plays? I have less than 30 on the year. Less than 30 plays on the year. I just am very, very, very selective, especially with the new shootout rules.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be very selective. That, I mean, you think about it. The team gets a win, but if you're betting it, you're going to get a loss. They go into overtime, go into a shootout, you could lose on a shootout. That's the reason I stopped playing hockey games, because I hated the idea that I have the better team. I have the better goalie. I have all these things that are better handicapped the right way, and I'm losing on shootouts. But this year, I felt like, you know, there were teams to jump on top of. Clearly, I jumped on the Islanders. I rode them. I'm not an Islanders fan, but I rode the Islanders really well. And I rode Tampa Bay. Yeah, they're big favorites, but, man, you know, look at what they're doing every night.
Yeah, big favorites to the tune of 122 points so far as the season winds down. And we have some playoff announcements to make, including one of the Vegas Golden Knights, as we know who their first-round opponent will be coming up here in about 10 days. So we'll talk about that tonight. But, Tom, come on, we got to start with what we know. Well, other than baseball, we'll talk about baseball as well. But the final four.
I was like, oh, we're talking baseball?
Right. Baseball show. Which, yeah. By the way, if you'd like for Tom and I to do a baseball podcast, go ahead and send your thoughts there on Twitter, at HW Sports, at Tom Barton Sports. The final four, Tom. We're set. We're the first ones in town that are going to talk about it. One number one seed, as already said at the beginning of the show, Virginia's in, and they got in skin of their teeth. Auburn, beautiful. They've just looked, since their run in the SEC tournament, right at the end of the season into the tournament, into this tournament, they've looked great. Michigan State takes out the hated Duke Blue Devils. People out here, well, I'm sure unless you're a fan of Duke, everybody hates them. And we're sitting here waiting for the Final Four next weekend as Texas Tech and former Rebel coach Chris Beard moves his team in the Final Four as well. Tom, where do you want to start with this? Let's start, how about Virginia? Let's talk about Virginia. They're a team that we both have financial stake in right now.
Yeah, financial stake. And how about this? On these airwaves, since we started, Tim, I gave out UConn before the year, 55-1 odds. I hit both Villanova before the year, all live on the air on our preseason show, both Villanova championships before the year, and I gave out UConn. I have a chance this year because I gave out Virginia before the year. That's going to be some research for Ari next weekend if they're in the finals, right? But I picked Virginia before the year, and I picked them again before the tournament began. I'll be honest with you, I had very little faith in it. I really did. Before the year, I loved them. I thought they were on the revenge tour. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The only way that you can ever erase a 16 losing to a 1 is by coming back and winning it the next year. Now, it won't necessarily erase it, but for the rest of history, the only way to have people talking how you want them to talk is people go, oh, remember when a 16 beat a 1? Oh, Virginia lost as a 1? Yeah, but the next year they came back and won it. It will always be attached. There will always be that secondary sentence. So I love them in the preseason. You could say what you want about Coach Bennett, and you saw me get into a fight on Facebook today about it. Mm-hmm. People go, well, he's boring. This is a bad style. Coach Bennett has out-coached Jay Williams in the regular season in the ACC the last 5 years. He's out-coached Coach K in the regular season in the last 5 years in the ACC. He has out-coached everybody in the country during the regular year. It was just a matter of, can he get over the hump? And I feel like we were saying this about the guy that I've made money on the last couple of years. I feel like we've been saying this about Jay Wright. I feel like that was the narrative around Jay Wright as well. Well, you know, he's a coach. He couldn't get over the hump. And you just got to do it once. Tony Bennett just has to do it one time. And when you start to see things, we talk about it in sports all the time. There's teams of destiny or, you know, just something kind of happens. When you see a play that propelled them into overtime like happened the other day, that was the player that made that shot, that was his only field goal in the second half. And it was with 1.101 seconds to go. It was an impossible play. He should have been able to execute. It made no sense at all that they were able to get the shot off. Not only did they get the shot off, they got the shot in. They got it to a player that will miss that shot more often than make it, and he made it. And you start to get the feeling like, yeah, it's their year. You know, it just might be their season. That's how I feel about Virginia. I thought they were the best team in college all year. I took a lot of flack when they lost twice to Duke. Took a lot of flack. I said, you know, I still think they're going to get them. I still think they have enough. I like their style. I like the defensive style. I like the slow down style. I like everyone wants to talk about Hunter. I like Guy. Guy is fantastic. And when you turn around and you look at this Virginia team, guys like Salt, guys that are underneath doing the dirty work, that's old-school basketball. And I like the fact that old-school basketball still can win, Tim.
You know, you kind of hit the nail on the head when you talk about Tony Bennett. And for anybody listening, it's a great argument over on Twitter at Tom Barton Sports. And the guy you're arguing with, yeah, he doesn't understand what basketball is all about. Because I think if you take, and it doesn't matter what team you're a fan of, but if you say, hey, Tony Bennett's our guy, in 10 years he's won 250 games, right? I get it.
Which no one's arguing, Tim, is the best conference in America, right? No one's arguing that.
It's obvious, right? And, okay, I get it. They play grinded-out basketball, right, Tom? They have that half-court game. They have the slowest tempo in basketball. But that's their style, and that's produced for them in the last 10 years. If you're a UNLV fan, and we'll talk about this in the second half of the hour, you wish you had somebody like Tony Bennett, regardless of the style of play. That's the guy you want. And I think you're right. He finally got over the hump because, you know, for years, I'll just say in the last 5 to 6 years that we've talked about NCAA basketball, Virginia was always a team that you or I or both at sometimes have thought that they were going to be a team to get to the Final Four. And he finally did it this year, Tommy. And I think, you know the bumps along the road, you want to talk about last year, obviously. It's in the record books, much like the worst loss in college football history. UNLV in the record books. UNLV will never be able to change that part of it, but he can here. Virginia can. They have a tough game.
But if UNLV turned around and won the national championship this year, you know,
yeah,
right.
Well,
you erase it.
That's not happening, though.
Right. Exactly.
Well, you know, look at Virginia, a tougher match than we thought against Gardner-Webb in the first round. They were able to extend Oklahoma in the second half and take them out in round two. Oregon, a tough matchup there in the Sweet 16. And the Purdue game was just absolutely nuts. As you and I were actually texting during the game. Absolutely, they needed a buzzer beater to get the game into overtime to take out Purdue. It just seems like everything is going their way, Tom. And now, with the way the chips are falling, it kind of falls into place for them here to take one home.
But can I get a little argumentative here? Okay, I know not to you because we were texting during the game. But can everybody shut up about the Gardner-Webb thing? Duke, guess what? Duke in the first round, how did they perform?
Yeah.
What about North Carolina, who was losing at the half? Right? Wasn't North Carolina losing at the half? Wasn't Duke at the half in their 1-16 game? You know, not doing so well. What about Michigan State? You want to go through all of the teams that didn't look good in the first half of the first game? All of the ones and twos, it seemed, didn't look great. North Carolina almost went home, okay? But Virginia came back. They won that game, and they won it the way that Virginia wins games. It's almost like talking about a defense-first running team in football, where people want to see the 50-point wins, and you go, that's just not how they play. You're a Ravens fan, okay? You remember the Ravens, the Steelers, those battle-it-out type of games. They weren't going to win games by 50 points because they didn't need to. You know, a 15 or 13-0 lead seemed insurmountable to them. In Virginia, that's what you have. Games are going to be close because they play tight defense. They limit possessions. They execute. They don't mind taking the clock down to 5 seconds every single time. So everybody out there, and you said it, man, people are giving them garbage for it. Can we shut up about Gardner-Webb? Because if you're going to bring up Gardner-Webb, let's bring up everybody else that struggled in the first half of the first game.
And isn't that a testament to how deep the field really was this year, that a 16 in two of those cases at least were not exactly what we're used to as the old adage of 16s are supposed to be?
Yeah, it really isn't. And UMBC shouldn't have been a 16 last year. I think we know that. And, you know, I'm not making excuses for last year at all. Look, it was ugly. It was what it was. But come on, guys. We need to calm down about, you know, oh, well, this team struggled for a half. Yeah, this team in the first game of the year, first half of the first game of the tournament, you know, didn't look that great. Man, oh, they didn't dominate. Come on. We've got to stop with that garbage. I mean, you turn around and you look at You know, Duke was up by 4 on North Dakota State in that first game. Up by 4. Anybody mention that? Anybody want to mention that? Against Iona, Iona had a 5-point UNC. 5-point lead. Anybody want to mention that? No, they don't mention that because it's Duke and North Carolina. It's no big deal. But I've heard the same thing today. Well, Virginia, oh, remember they struggled against Gardner-Webb? I guarantee you if North Carolina and Duke were here, nobody would mention that they struggled against North Dakota State and Iona.
Yeah. Kyle Guy, is this the guy that is Guy the guy in the Final Four, Tom?
It's funny because everybody thinks it's Hunter. And I'm not questioning that Hunter is a better NBA player. He is a lottery pick. I think he goes in the top 10. Hunter is a NBA player. He's an NBA guy. The person that I want with the ball is Guy. I think he is everything to this team. When he's on fire, the team feeds off of him. But I'll tell you who it is, Tim. You're going to laugh, but it's Salt. Not here. He's their big man. You don't need him to score. You don't need him to score at all. Okay, it's not the scoring. He's got to be able to beat the guys down low. He's got to be able to put a body on them. He's got to be able to get those rebounds. Virginia is one of those teams that frustrates you on the defensive side and on the offensive side drives you crazy. Why? Because of those second-chance possessions, those offensive rebounds. That's where Saul makes his living, and you know, and that's where they have to live. I think he's the most important player.
I think that, you know, when you look at this game coming up, and we'll talk about their opponent here in a minute, that maybe some value lays in Virginia because of the way the style of their opponent is, and the fact that even last night or 2 nights ago, with the way that they were able to get the game to overtime to extend and then win, you know, a lot of that had to do with Edwards on Purdue just having a superhuman night, Tom, because I think if he has just a normal Carson Edwards game, Virginia wins this game by double digits easily.
Not only that, but let's be honest. Edwards looked great. He had one of the most, if not the most impressive performance I've ever seen in a Sweet 16 in a tournament game. I mean, he was unreal. But a lot of his shots, Tim, a lot of his shots were, oh, come on. You know, the bank shot at the end, we all know, it's an ugly shot, it's a terrible shot. How does that fall? Let's kind of sit back and just relax here about, you know, what exactly, you know, oh, well, they were a lot closer. You're right. Purdue was close. Purdue was close because of one man. One man having a game that nobody that is left in this tournament, and I'm not sure anybody, including Zion, could have had against Virginia. I don't think anybody could have had that sort of game. It was unbelievable.
The Cavs will take on the Auburn Tigers on Saturday. Bruce Pearl takes Auburn to their first ever Final Four by virtue of a overtime win over Kentucky 77-71 today. Tommy, great matchup here. As you know, Auburn likes to run. They like to run and gun. Virginia doesn't. So we're going to have a battle of styles here, a clash of the champions. And you talk about Saul on the other side. Obviously today, the game we watched, Tommy, Jared Harper makes Auburn go.
Yeah, listen, Auburn, everybody kind of overreacted to the injury. And I think when you're looking at the injury, I think it's going to have an impact here. I think it's going to have an impact going forward. You know, you said, yeah, Auburn loves to run. Yeah, they do. But guess what? Virginia has seen this before, mm-hmm. haven't they?
Yep.
Who else loves to run, Tim? North Carolina. How did they do against North Carolina? They beat them by 8. They held them to 61 points in North Carolina. You know, so they did that at Chapel Hill, guys. I know you can't compare one team to another, but I think in this sense, they're a very similar team. I think North Carolina and Auburn was why that matchup was going to be so fun. They both wanted to run. They both wanted to play the same sort of style. The Auburn Tigers at full strength would worry me immensely. But I said this last week, and one of the reasons why I backed Virginia yesterday, and I took them, gave it out to TomBartonSports.com people. I told everybody it was my best bet on my New York show. I said, everybody, listen, I just think that you give who I consider right now, today, the best coach in college basketball for this season, You give him a week to prepare, and it's a problem. And right now, Bruce Pearl is going to have to switch things up because of the injury. He didn't have time to switch things up, kind of threw them out there. That happens in sports. A big guy goes down, and the team kind of rallies, and you don't miss him for a game. But eventually it catches up to you. And now you're giving Bruce Pearl, who's done a terrific job, but you're giving him a week to prepare with an injury looming, and you're giving Tony Bennett a week to prepare for a hobbled Auburn team. I like my chances with Virginia. I like what Auburn does, but it's not like Virginia hasn't seen this. They haven't. Auburn's faced decent defenses before. They haven't faced a defense anywhere near what they're going to face in Virginia. Virginia, though, has faced offenses that are like Auburn.
And let's face it, Auburn rode the momentum in the end of the season into the SEC tournament. They got the job done, Tom. Another team that survived in the first round, right? Barely squeaking by New Mexico State. But then their next three opponents, and you know, the way it's going to be presented, and I've already seen it in one story I read earlier tonight, when they took out all the blue bloods, Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky, all those teams are run-and-gun teams, just as you just mentioned. Virginia goes the other way, and it will be a battle of wills, but you're right. I think we might have some value here as I'm looking at Virginia right around a five-point favorite.
I just hate laying points with Virginia when they get to the tournament. Look, all year long, they were beating people by 20 points, and I was loading up. I bet Virginia this year more than I've bet any other team. That's statistical. You guys could go back and you can check it out. I bet Virginia at more than a 75% clip this year, so I knew what I was doing. Basically, I was just riding Virginia to blow people out. But when it got to the ACC tournament, when it got to the end of the year, they were playing close games. They tended to do that. They tended to get close. When they have now shut it down, listen, we all talk about Gardner-Webb. Yeah, they won that one by 15, but they didn't cover, okay? They beat Oklahoma by 12, 4 to Oregon, overtime 5 to Purdue. Virginia plays that style, and I hate laying points with a team that plays the style of, okay, we can win this 1-3. It's perfectly fine with us. They are a team that has no problem playing that style. They're a team that actually enjoys close, tight, you know, Nick games. I think Tony Bennett wants a close game because he thinks his guys are more prepared for it than their guys are. And I tend to agree with him. I do believe that Auburn is good enough to beat Virginia. I think Virginia wins. But I know you're saying value, Tim, and you may be right. Virginia might win by 10. If I'm betting this game, I'm betting money line or nothing because I could see them winning by 3.
Yeah. Money line would be the safe play.
Yeah, and that's what I took this weekend. You know, I took the money line. I mean, they covered by a half on a bad beat, by the way, for people out there, you know. But, listen, nothing wrong with the money line. You're going to lay about 220. I would rather lay the 220. I think Virginia wins, just not exactly sure that they could cover a six-point spread.
I'm really, really interested in seeing the battle of wills here. Auburn, I think for the season, was a top five program in scoring, top 25 team in three-point percentage made shots. Harper, I love Jared Harper a lot. You know, what is he, Tom? 5'10", maybe? Without him, they don't get as far as they are. It's obvious like that. But now you're going into a realm of this, and we saw him struggle during the SEC season with schools that slowed the tempo down. And now you're playing the best team at slowing the tempo down.
Yeah, you know, one of the things about teams that run, and I heard Jay Williams mention this about 5 or 6 years ago. He said when you stop teams, because his team likes to run, when you stop teams from running and they just don't run, they get frustrated. They get annoyed. You know, they want to keep running. And then what happens is they make mistakes because they want to get out. They want to get in transition. They want to go fast. And you're just not allowing them to do that. You think about it, to put it into a football analogy, why do running teams really drive teams crazy? Because they want to get out there. They want to throw the ball. They're not used to playing that style. If you're not used to playing that style, especially, by the way, look at the last two of Auburn opponents. You know, they were, Kentucky said, you want to run? Okay, we'll run. They try to play defense, but they like to run too. They love the fast break. UNC was saying, okay, we'll see who gets to 100 first. I mean, both of their opponents. Now all of a sudden you have to completely switch your philosophy. I don't think Auburn could do it.
So essentially, if Auburn's going to win this game, they're going to have to hit the three ball, Tom.
I think the same thing goes for Virginia, too. Mm-hmm. I think whoever is hitting their outside shots is going to win this game. Auburn has got to hit the three ball. Virginia, I don't believe Virginia can win, though, just going inside. I think they've got to hit their shots as well. But that's Virginia in every game, and that's why Virginia is such a dangerous team to be backing, because they have so few possessions they rely upon. Well, when we have the ball and we waste 25 seconds off the clock, we've got to hit. We've got to make that shot. If they're not making it, they dig themselves into a hole, and they're just not a team that could come from behind.
Kyle Guy, Tom, 115 threes this season. There's your answer.
Yeah, let's hope that the week off helps that ankle. Remember, he rolled his ankle. It didn't swell up right away, guys. So let's hope that that's no lingering effects there either.
Virginia-Auburn, Final Four matchup number one. We'll return from the timeout. Talk about the second game. Texas Tech and Chris Beard. Chris Wynn, I know you're listening, takes on your Michigan State Spartans. And Tom Izzo will break that down for you after the timeout. It's Heat Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Walsh Jennings, and you are listening to Heat Wave Sports on Fox Sports Radio.
I can't believe you asked that. I really can't believe it. Let me see here. Kentucky Wildcats, number 4 in the country. I'm hearing 4 first round draft choices. And you're asking me how that got away from me?
They're the big blue. You ought to know that. I'm not mad at you.
Now back to Heat Wave Sports. Here's Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
Yeah, it didn't get away from Auburn today as they knock out Kentucky in overtime, 77-71, to move on to the Final Four, where they'll take on Virginia. Who's in the other side of that bracket? Tom, we'll start with the former coach of the UNLV Running Rebels. Yes, I love saying that, as we all know of that. I'm going to call that debacle number one, because we will talk about debacle number two in the second hour. But debacle number one, Chris Beard, Tom, moves Texas Tech into their first ever Final Four as they push out Gonzaga, the number one seed, over in the West, 75-69 on Saturday night.
I'm really impressed with this Texas Tech team. You know, I've kind of ripped them apart all year, and not intending to necessarily rip them apart. I just didn't believe in the Big 12. You know, it was a conference that I thought they were clearly behind everybody else. I mean, you see me pump up the ACC to no end. I was actually impressed in defending the SEC this year, and I don't think anybody could argue, you know, that the Big Ten was right there. And I just thought that they were clearly the fourth best conference. Kansas absolutely had a down year. I never believed in Kansas State. And by virtue, I sort of just knocked Texas Tech because of the people that they were playing. And listen, I'm owning up to it. You know, I completely underrated this team. I started watching them, you know, sporadically through the year, and I was impressed with what I saw, but who were they playing? What was the competition? Was always what I ran back to. College basketball, as opposed to college football, I really, really, really bank on night in and night out, you're able to play the upper echelon teams going into the tournament. I think that helps. I think it helps massively. I didn't think Texas Tech was that team. I think that they were that kind of team to step up and, after, you know, what I considered a weak schedule, to turn it on and really do what they've done. But, man, have they. You guys want to hear a terrible statement here? For UNLV fans, close your ears. Tremendous coaching. Just absolutely tremendous coaching. The coaching, you can't even deny how good it's been right now. Do I think Texas Tech has enough to move on and you know, to again pull the upset against Michigan State and then pull the upset against whoever they face in the finals? I don't. I think it's been a really nice run. But I have doubted them all year. I have doubted them from the get-go. I have doubted them every step of the way. So, Texas Tech fans, you want me to keep doubting them because I doubted them because of their conference. I doubted them because I wasn't maybe as familiar with them as I should have been. And now I'm sitting here doubting them again. I worry about Texas Tech having that time off. You know, they were rolling. They were on fire. They are top of the mountain. They beat teams they shouldn't have. Now they get to sit and think about it. And a team like this that, quote-unquote, should not be here, right, or should be happy to be here, sometimes are. Sometimes they're reading the press clippings of, wow, first team ever in history to make the Final Four, and it's been forever, and, oh, my God, what, nobody expected this. They know that right now they've already reached it. You know, they've already accomplished something, and sometimes that lets a team kind of rest on their laurels.
And there's no doubt that defensively they're one of the top teams in the country, and I think you're right. As the Big 12 season progressed, and you're looking at the standing, and it's like, oh, Texas Tech, top of the division or conference, top of the conference. But like you said, Tom, well, Kansas is struggling this year. K-State, I don't believe that. West Virginia's down this year, right? Take a look at Texas down. All of a sudden, they finish 14-4, Tom. They go into the tournament. They take out Iowa State, right? Or they get taken out by Iowa State. And it's almost like, well, that's what we thought it was going to be. Then the tournament starts. And after Northern Kentucky, they just steamrolled Buffalo and Michigan back-to-back and then beat one of the top offensive teams in the country in Gonzaga. And all of a sudden, you're just like, wow, they are a legit threat here. And I think for them, everybody loves Jarrett Culver so much at 19 points a game, 7 boards. They have guys, other guys that can score, because in that Gonzaga game, he was essentially shut down, Tommy. It was the rest of the team that picked it up for him.
Well, let's look at who they played, okay? And I hate to punch holes, and you guys want to celebrate about Texas Tech? Give us a call. 1340-876-1340. Tell me I'm crazy. But, okay, Tim, they beat a Buffalo team. I know Buffalo was good. They were from a really, really poor conference, a bad conference. And everybody loved Buffalo. I get it. That, to me, is not the statement kind of win. You know, that is a good win, obviously. But Buffalo in a real conference, who are they? Then they went on and they beat Michigan, a Michigan team that was massively sputtering at the end of the year, spiraling downhill. They were about 500 at the end of the year. They didn't look like the Michigan that I was talking about in December. That was not necessarily a surprising result, right? That wasn't a game that we all said, oh, my God, what a shocking loss. Again, not to me, not that necessarily signature win. And then Gonzaga. I know I have Gonzaga people on my Twitter feed constantly, you know, ripping apart. I used to love them. I used to love Gonzaga. But people that are sitting here telling me that they deserve to be a one seed and maybe the number one overall, they just weren't tested at all. And that's why I said Gonzaga was going to be the number one seed to go home. I thought that that was the problem with Gonzaga. With Texas Tech, where I'm looking, is their resume leading up to this, were three teams that were vastly overrated and playing their worst basketball at the end of the year. Michigan was playing clearly their worst basketball at the end of the year, and Gonzaga got spanked by St. Mary's in their only contest, the only shot that they had, you know, to even put a little pressure. So I'm still sitting here unimpressed with Texas Tech. Now, you know, I mean, we're talking about a Final Four team. Obviously, the whole of their season has impressed me. But I'm still not going, wow, you know what? They've convinced me. You get by Michigan State, well, yeah, of course. But that will be, to me, their biggest test. You could tell me Gonzaga was a one, okay? You could talk to me about Gonzaga's a one, and they were a legit one. I never bought into it this year. I never bought into the Zags.
And I think if you're Chris Beard, Tom, you're using that as bulletin board material. Like you said, on a run, first time there, things can work for you negatively with all those factors playing into it. But if he's a good enough motivator, he can turn it back around and say, look, you guys didn't win your tournament to get in. You know, nobody thought you should have been seated as high as you were. Everybody's talking about Michigan State. This is a perfect time for you guys to, once again, all the naysayers out there that think you don't belong, let's use that momentum and take out another giant.
It absolutely is. And you know what? Not that Chris Beard's listening to this program, but he should be. You know, I don't mind being on the bulletin board for something like that, because I'm not going back and saying 2020 is hindsight, right? I'm calling it before time. Before the tournament, I told everybody Buffalo was not what they were. Before the tournament, I said Gonzaga's the weakest number one seed, and they were going to go down because they weren't tested. Before the tournament, I said Michigan is playing terrible, right? I mean, there are things that are on record for me saying, so I'm not going to back off of it. You know what I mean? I'm just not going to back off of it. It is what it is. Texas Tech is a good team. Do I see Texas Tech with the ability to cut down the nets? I don't see it. I'm not telling you I'm not impressed with what they're doing, but I just don't see it. And for the reasons you said, overranked, sure. Didn't win your own conference? Yeah. In a weak conference? Absolutely. Went through three teams that may have all been playing their worst basketball of the season? Yeah, I'm buying into that as well.
Chris Wynn, Tom, was running down Fremont naked after the Michigan State Spartans knocked out the Duke Blue Devils today, 68-67. So I believe, Tom, if I'm wrong, correct me, Tom Izzo now going to his seventh Final Four in 24 years at Michigan State. You know,
How many championships he's got, Tim?
Yeah, he's got one, correct?
We had this argument, me, you, and Ron, remember?
Yep. Ron was furious.
I had this argument when Ron was still a part of the show.
Yep.
And I said, I'm going to say something completely, you know, controversial, and that is, you know, Tom Izzo is a little overrated. And people were going crazy about it. Tom Izzo takes teams that don't belong, and he brings them to where they are now. Michigan State probably didn't belong in this position. But this is where Izzo has problems, Tim.
Yeah, and I remember that argument because I compared him to Bobby Cox, and he got mad at me too. So it was at the point, you know, at that point, it was what? So I'm thinking, I want to say it was around 2009. I think it was when, because they made it again the year after. So he was at only, he was 1-for-5 at that point. Now he went back in 2010, 2015, and he didn't win. So now he's 1-of-7. But look, it is what it is, right, Tom? He gets them there. And I think last year, it was supposed to be a rebuilding year for Michigan State, and that just shows you how quickly they reload.
Yeah, look, he's a fantastic, fantastic coach. But all the people that are sitting back and talking about, you know, Tony Bennett's problems aren't talking about Tom Izzo's problems, right? To get over that hump. This is one of his, I would say, weaker teams leading into the season. But the job that he's done this year has been absolutely phenomenal. He's gotten over the injuries. And I think that's the big thing with you know, Tom Izzo for this season. If you put it in a capsule, you're going to say, obviously, everyone's going to remember Duke and remember, you know, beating Zion and sending him home, which I want to talk about in a moment. But the further question is really, you know, has anybody done a better job coaching this year when you include what happened to Ward and with the injuries that they did? It was indicative of the line today, Tim, that people did buy into Michigan State. You know, Duke is usually a public bet team. Zion is a lightning rod. And the line was moving back towards Michigan State. And that's an indictment on Izzo. Listen, he's that good. He's that good. He's got Coach K's number. This is where I worry if I'm a Michigan State fan, because we've seen it so many times where he just doesn't get over the hump. He can't get over that hump. And if Michigan State doesn't cut down the nets again, listen, I'm a Yankee fan, guys. Greatness comes this responsibility. Tom Izzo is greatness. But it comes to the point where if Virginia or Texas Tech or whoever knocks him out with 1 second to go, guess what we're talking about next year, Tim? The Bobby Cox syndrome again.
Yeah.
So there is pressure on Izzo. Like, I don't believe that there's pressure on any of these other teams. Even Virginia, okay? I don't think there's pressure on any of these teams except for Izzo. And I don't even know about his team, but him personally, there's pressure on.
And I don't want to be the guy to say this, especially here in Las Vegas, but all I heard in today, you know, leading into today's matchup with Duke was Izzo's a better coach than Krzyzewski. This is BS. You know, I hate Duke. Is more of hating what's already been done rather than looking at the actual stats in front of your face, because we just said now Izzo in his seventh Final Four, he has won one, right, Tom? Krzyzewski's won 5-12. A little more successful there. I don't think you could say he's overrated when you're talking about wins and losses.
No, absolutely not. Look, Coach K, the argument is, well, you know, unless he's got five NBA players on his team, he doesn't win. But guess what? He gets those players. I look at Coach K the way I look at Nick Saban. Okay, if you took Coach K and you put him in, a junior college kind of program, or you put him in the NBA, I doubt he has the kind of success. I know that he doesn't have the success. But recruiting is a part of college football. I don't think that Nick Saban is a very good football coach. I think he's solid. I think he is a massively intense, ridiculously great recruiter. Okay? And that is part of the college game. That is part of Coach K's game. Now, you can say he doesn't have to recruit because he's Duke. Yeah, I get that. But he does get the big guys. He does, get who he's got to get. This year is disappointing because of the hype around Zion. The hype around Zion is nauseating. I spoke to, and I can tell you this, I spoke to somebody that works on the television side, okay? And we spoke, this is confidential, I can't tell you exactly who it was. And he said, basically our pre-meetings on the television side go a little something like this. Keep talking about Zion. You got a minute to spare? Talk up Zion, because he's the best thing for college basketball. He's the best thing for ratings. So I think Zion is way overrated at where he is now. And when I say way overrated, I'm not going the Francesa route who thinks he's going to be like a bust in the NBA. I'm going the route where I'm hearing greatest NBA, greatest college player they've ever seen, and I'm going, yeah, I don't think so. Okay, I don't think so. Oh, he's going to come in, he's going to be a generational talent. I think that Grant Hill said if he came into the NBA today, he's a top 20 player. There are other guys saying he's going to have LeBron-like effect. I don't buy into any of that, Tim. Do I think he's a good player? Yeah. And then you look at Barrett. The one thing with Zion going down was I thought Barrett was a top two or three pick. I think with Zion going down, what we saw is that he cannot lead this team. He's not a guy that has enough skill set to put the team on his shoulders. It exposed Reddish as well. Reddish is another guy that I think got a little exposed. So let's not just look at this being as a Coach K problem. I think his number two and three guys got massively exposed when Zion wasn't out there. It's a team that I watched against Virginia, and I was massively impressed with, but I just thought the matchup was terrible for Virginia. I watched again. I made money on both games against North Carolina this year, and I looked at both games. Even, Zion blew his shoe out. You can say what you want about it. I was on Carolina that game. I just didn't buy into the Duke hype. I was looking stupid for a while there. But when you start to talk about greatest college basketball team of all time in mid-season, you're talking about greatest college basketball player of all time mid-season, and they don't make a Final Four. Tim, that's an indictment on Coach K, on Zion, on Reddish, on Barrett, and on everybody associated with that. Talk to me now about how great Zion is today. Pump him up. Tell me how amazing he is. He is out of the conversation of being the greatest college basketball player of all time if you can't make a Final Four with a team that was considered maybe one of the greatest teams of all time. This is a bad look for Coach K, and a bad look for Zion. There's nobody that you can seriously come to me with an argument that this doesn't look bad for them.
I want to know why in the last, what was it, about a minute and a half, I think Duke had three possessions. R.J. Barrett took all three shots on those possessions. Zion didn't get a shot off in those three. How is it, if he's dominating the game, he had 24 and 14, once he got in the paint, he wasn't being stopped, Tom. And if you're Coach K, you're that guy, you know what you need to do. Why is R.J. Barrett leading the charge down the stretch? Why isn't this ball going into Zion, win or lose?
Tim, I have that as a bullet talking point that I was going to bring up. Whose fault is it? How do you not give it to Zion and live and die with him making or missing that shot? What does that say about Coach K's faith in him? What does that say about Zion as a player? I mean, if I'm Zion as a player, and I really am as good as being hyped, don't you come to the sideline and say, no matter what happens, guys, give me the ball here? And if you're Coach K, and you're going to go down here unless Zion makes a shot, as somebody will need a clutch shot Don't you give it to Zion? Now, I will say this. The counter side of that is early on in LeBron's career, we had a lot of the same things, remember. Early on in LeBron's career, he didn't want the ball late or he didn't get the ball late. Whatever, whoever's call it was there, it's not necessarily a mistake, guys. And I've seen people say, well, it was a mistake. It's not necessarily a coaching mistake. I think that tells us something. I think that tells us something about how Coach K feels about Zion and about how Zion is for the demanding the ball kind of player.
Tom, I saw this on Twitter, and I wanted to get your thoughts on what the gentleman was saying. They had showed an interview after the loss today with Trey Jones from Duke, and he had said something to the effect of that the adversity that the athletes that play on the Duke basketball team goes through is so stressing because it's literally like, other than in Durham, North Carolina, where the university sits, that everywhere they go, they are hated, ridiculed, talked crap to, whatever you want to say, you know. And he said, for being a young college athlete, just that stress is so emotionally overbearing for these guys at times that it's like one of the worst things you could do to a human being is to live in that aspect of being a Duke Blue Devil. Agree or disagree?
Completely and utterly disagree. It's not just Duke. If you go to any of these programs, you go to Kentucky, you think Kentucky doesn't get booed. You go to North Carolina, you think North Carolina doesn't get booed. Come on. You know, it might be a little elevated being at Duke, but Duke also has more fans around the country than anywhere else as well. You're going into, if Duke would have drawn, let's say it was a Final Four, a finals of Duke, Virginia, and they were in Los Angeles, Duke would have more fans there than Virginia, right? So it goes both ways. I think it's a kid not realizing his surroundings. I'm not going to even blame him. I think it's a kid just not realizing his surroundings and hearing people go, oh, man, you know, they pump it up there at Duke. I live there, okay? They pump it up, us against the world, us against the world, us against the world, you know? And it's just not like that. It's really just not like that. It is... more Duke fans, just like the Yankees, just like Dallas, just like the Patriots. You have more fans of that, and you have more fans that don't like you. But they don't like you not because you're Duke. They don't like you because you're good. And if you were North Carolina and in number one, number one seed, moving on, and a guy that was the number one player, you'd be getting the same thing. If you were Kentucky, Kentucky got it for years, right?
Yeah.
Kentucky got it for years, that same kind of thing. It would be the same. It's the same for all athletes that are playing for a good, really good program.
North Carolina got it for years. UNLV was different for UNLV, Tom, was that a lot of the younger generation loved UNLV, whereas a lot of the old-timers, especially on the East Coast, didn't like what UNLV supposedly represented. But, of course, you know, things...
Yeah, UNLV was disliked because of their own doing,
right?
You know, because of what they were. Kentucky is disliked a lot of times because of the one and done mentality. You know, I will say this about Zion, by the way. I'm not a Duke hater. I don't like Duke. Okay, I probably should hate him more than I do. He's a hard guy to hate, man. I find myself rooting for him all the time, which is so rare for a Duke player to be able to kind of elevate to that level.
He'll be a popular guy in the NBA, Tom.
Well, you know, everybody seems to want him in New York. I think if he comes to New York, he takes this city by storm. Even though I don't believe he's a top 10 player, I think he takes the city by storm. I think if he goes to Atlanta, that could be a really interesting situation with him and Trae Young. Could be dynamic. I think if he goes to a team like Phoenix, his team will bring down his legacy. I don't think he's good enough to elevate a garbage team unless you're kind of one of those big cities. I don't think he goes to Cleveland and can do anything great. And I will say this, the giant talk, not to get into the NBA draft, but the giant talk is that one way or another, whether Zion comes or doesn't, that Kevin Durant's playing in New York next year. And I am hearing this from people that are really close to the situation that are assuring me that Durant is going to be in New York next year. So New York Knicks with Durant and Zion, Yeah, that could be really interesting. And I think he's better off being that guy, being that two to a superstar.
Even if the Warriors win again this year, he still leaves?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. And listen, the only reason I think so is because I'm trusting the people that I'm speaking to. It doesn't make a lot of sense on my end, but I'm from what I'm hearing is that Durant wanted to go there, prove a point, and he always had intentions of leaving.
Quick thought, if you have it on this, Tom, as we head to the first hour timeout. Michigan State, a 3-point favorite over Texas Tech in the Final Four matchup on Saturday.
I got to go Michigan State. You know, I got to go Michigan State. I think that they're just playing so well right now. And they're playing so well right now because they're getting healthy. They are finally healthy. The only problem is that Bobby Cox on the sidelines is a concern for me. I can't believe it's a concern, but it's a concern.
Hour two on the way. When we come back, Rebel fans, get ready. Tim and Tom will give the real analysis on the UNLV coaching search, which ended this past week with Coach O being hired. Also, I'm going to give props to Tom Barton in hour two, because Tommy said something on these airwaves that did come true. We'll talk about that as well. Still a full 2 hours left to go here on your Super Sunday Night edition of Heatwave Sports. We're back after this.